The Catholics of Oz is brought to you by the StarQuest Production Network and is made possible by our many generous patrons. If you'd like to support the podcast, please visit sqpn.com/give.
You're listening to episode 23 of Catholics of Oz. Catholics of Oz is a show where we discuss faith, culture, and what's been happening from an Aussie perspective. Whether it's synods or science, apostolates and apps, providence or productivity, you can hear it right now on the Catholics of Oz. Hello and welcome to episode 23 of the Catholics of Oz. It's our last episode for the year right before Christmas, and we're very happy to have you here with us. And joining me today is my, last time I called you my superior sibling, I think it was. Mm-hmm. What should I call? My wiser sibling. Yeah, we're getting close to Christmas, so with my wiser sibling, Caroline Knight. How are you, Caroline?
Well, thank you. I do have a bit of a head cold, so please excuse me for this episode. I think Melbourne is the only place where you can get a head cold in the middle of so-called summer, but we will persevere.
Nothing says Australia like a head cold in summer.
The best.
It's the best. Yeah. And that was sarcasm for anyone who didn't know. Anyway. So before we begin our last episode of the year, we'd just like to remind everyone, please, to like the episodes of Catholics of Oz as they appear on the SQPN Facebook page. Don't forget to retweet our episodes on Twitter and leave us some nice comments to ask other people to listen and share with them. You can also subscribe to the Catholics of Oz on Apple Music, Google Play, Stitcher, TuneIn, or your favorite podcast app. We're also on SQPN's YouTube page, so just find SQPN on YouTube and hit the bell to get notifications when new episodes of our shows and other shows come out. You can also leave us feedback on Apple Music. That makes a big difference to us because it means that the algorithms put us somewhere up the top and other people can find us as well. And don't forget to share us with friends and other people who are part of your communities so that we can share our message with more listeners, but more importantly, interact and hear from you as well, which is one of the reasons why we do what we do. So let's start with Faith Beyond Borders.
Well, I'm actually feeling rather good about this. I think we've all arrived at a very special place, eh? Oh. Spiritually, ecumenically.
How do you make somebody love you without affecting free will?
Welcome to my world, son. You come up with an answer to that one, you let me know.
Yes, I had to work very hard to pass Latin and theology.
Oh, quite. Those are, of course, the most important things.
Oh, yeah.
I'd sit this one out, Cap.
I don't see how I can.
These guys come from legend. They're basically gods.
There's only one god, man. And I'm pretty sure he doesn't dress like that.
So, our Faith Beyond Borders today, we thought it's our last show of the year, so we wanted to do a bit of a review, a reflection of how the year, our first year on the StarQuest network has gone as the Catholics of Oz. And so we just wanted to talk about some of the experiences that we've had, some of the highlights that we've had, and maybe if you have any highlights from our show, you might want to tell us, just say every episode was a highlight. That'd be great. And then maybe we'll have a bit of a chat about Advent as our Catholic Faith Beyond Borders topic, I guess. So, Caroline, what has been some of the highlights of being of doing Catholics of Oz in this first year of the show for you?
Well, I think we've had such a great, fun year this year. We've had so many fun opportunities and so many interviews with fun people. I guess the first thing that I enjoyed personally was being able to take over the show and talk about the Apollo 11 mission with the first moon landing all the way back, you know, in the, 1969. And that was a really fun episode for me because I got to research that and just talk about that. I had a lot of fun when we were on Let's Talk with Father Corey. That was really fun. That was such a fun episode. And then, having Carlo Broussard on our podcast and interviewing him, having Absolutely. Our own little Catholic Answers session, you know, talking about his book. And finally,
can I say on meeting the Protestant challenge? There, I got the title right.
Very good, you've got the title right. I guess the latest thing that was, highlight for both of us, Lindsay, was just last week we were on Jimmy Akin's Mysterious World, yeah. And we were able to make contributions in regard to the episode covering the Somerton Man.
Yes.
And I guess, you know, just being able to share topics about science all through the year was really great. You know, that's such a great opportunity to be able to share, you know, the topics that you love with people and interact. So, yeah, I think it's been tons of fun. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. It's been a good year. I mean, I think we're still pinching ourselves that, you know, this was the network that we used to listen to, you know, listening to Father Roderick do his shows, you know, back in the day, and listening to Secrets of Star Wars and all the other shows that were part of the SQPN network and are kind of coming back as well, I should say. And to say, wow, we're on the StarQuest network doing a show from an Australian perspective has been great. And I've really loved, you know, there's been a couple of moments which has been great where we've had some, you know, some people who listen give us feedback. And I absolutely love that because for me, it's not just about people listening to our voices and that's it. But it's also about hearing what other people have to say as well. I love dialoguing with other Catholics and maybe people who are not Catholic as well, who hear our perspective and share their thoughts and ideas. And we've had a few moments, five or six moments throughout the year where that's happened. And those have been the happiest moments for me is that because I like to, you know, like you and Jared, who has been with us as well, just like to provide content that people can listen to and enjoy and interact with us as well. It's one of the key things for us. Have to say, and Jared should be back with us next year. He's been on a bit of a break, but just with other things that he's had to do. But, you know, having Jared with us as well, providing his perspective has been a lot of fun. And I think the funnest moments, obviously it's fun when it's two of us, you know, sometimes because of circumstances being you and me or me and Jared or whatever. But when the three of us are together and we're just having a good old time, just, you know, laughing about things and sharing our perspective and going quite deep about some things as well. Mm-hmm. It's been quite good. Yeah. I've enjoyed that.
Yeah.
Lots of fun. I liked being able to get Father Rob Galea at the start of the year in one of our very early episodes. He was, you know, fresh back from World Youth Day after singing for a million people and then in front of the Pope at World Youth Day. And we got to have him on the show and just have a chat with him for about 10 minutes about his experiences and some other things there. So that was really good too. And like you said, you've mentioned all the big ones, you know, having these guests like Carlo Broussard and being on Let's Talk were, this is just beyond, I think, anything we thought was going to happen. I think and I and Jared probably thought, you know, we'll do our podcast, we'll just be another part of the lineup. But I love the crossover we've had, which has been really good. And probably I think we have to thank Don Bettinelli for the opportunities that he's given us. Yeah, to be on Jimmy Akin's Mysterious Worlds. You know, he gave us the keys to Secrets of TV and Movies at one stage.
That's
and
right.
We did an episode on the second Lego movie, which was a lot of fun as well. It was good to do a podcast that was different to this one, talking about, you know, dedicating a whole hour to a movie. So hopefully we'll be able to do a few more things like that next year and we'll just see where it takes us, I guess.
Yeah. I have to echo what you said, Lindsay, as well, that this has been so amazing for us, and I think it's something that we never probably thought that we'd be doing, you know, being on the SQPN network, you know, working alongside these amazing people that, you know, we used to listen to on podcasts ourselves and we just heard names. Like, we used to hear the name Dom Bettinelli and now we actually know Dom, which is fantastic. And, you know, all of these amazing people. And Lindsay, I have to say too, the other reason I really enjoy being on the podcast is because I get to do it with my brother.
Yeah.
I get to
actually,
do it with you.
Thing is fun.
We're pretty close anyway, but this is such a privilege to be able to be on a podcast with you. And, you know, we have similar ideas, which is helpful, but, you know, I think we work really well together, have a good interaction, and yeah, even with Jerry, you know, he's our family as well, and you know, it's a good dynamic between the three of us. So I to be with both of you is just a real privilege for me as well. So
agree to all of the above. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so at the time of recording, it's we're in sort of like getting close to mid-December, but this is coming out just before Christmas. So we wanted to keep this podcast joyful, Christmassy, we won't get too silly. There's no eggnog here, so I'm not gonna fall off the microphone at some stage for the podcast.
I just have a ginger tea.
That's probably a safer option. But we did want to go through today's episode talking about things that were Christmassy, things to help us prepare for Christmas, because I think one of the important things for us really, and like I said, we want to produce content for the people who are listening that they'll get something out of. And so we're, going through the season of Advent and we're heading towards Christmas and Advent and Lent as well. Both of these seasons, I think sometimes there's a risk. And I'm speaking especially from my perspective, but I'm sure this is true for many of us. There's a risk that we are so busy in our lives that we forget that we're actually in these seasons. That, you know, for example, that we're in the season of Advent right now. And the thing is, if we miss it completely, Christmas can have no context. Christmas will be just about the food and the presents, and you know, and then Christ is just the kind of the add-on that comes later. So I guess today what we did want to talk about in our Faith Beyond Borders is just to share some things about Advent as well. So Caroline, if you don't mind, I might just chuck a few quick thoughts in and then we can talk about what we do for Advent, if it's all right. So I've got just a quick reflection. For me, when we get to Advent, there's a lot of things to help us along the way. I like that Advent is broken into the first week of Advent, the second week, you know, and each Sunday we reset with a new candle that means something else. And for me, Advent, one of the things I think about is that it is about expectation. You know, Advent is the coming, the event of something happening. And we're talking about the advent of Christ in a way. So we think about what's come before us and what's still to come. So, you know, what's come before us obviously is Christ, is the birth of this child. You know, we have this baby who came and changed the world and warmed our hearts. Oh, no, wait, sorry, I'm thinking of Baby Yoda. Let me go back. So I'm sorry. But in all seriousness, we look back to the first expectation for a Messiah. The Old Testament talks about, you know, the Messiah is coming. Who is the Messiah? How will we know? And things like that. There are all these expectations that it could be a great king, you know, who takes over and sets up a government in Jerusalem, and there's a perfect, you know, heaven on earth government set up for everything, and all those kinds of things. But we actually find it in the least expected, and that is that God comes as a child, as a baby, and grows into this adult who becomes the person that we turn our attention and our thoughts to in our everyday lives. And what I love about the Advent journey is that we have these 4 weeks of Advent, and we have the four candles that we light across the Advent season. So when we think about it, I think for me, it's like gathering things along the way of this journey. So when we have candles of peace, hope, faith, and joy, and I'm pretty sure I got those in the wrong order because I know that joy is definitely the third week.
Right? But they're all there.
But they're all there. But these are things, I guess, that we gather along to prepare us for Christ, you know, who is, you know, Christmas Day and the Christmas season, which goes until January the 6th, which is the Feast of the Epiphany, and it might also be my birthday, but we'll put that aside as well. Another baby who was important.
Another important baby.
Just a short reflection I wanted to share. And I think I might have mentioned this in previous podcasts, but every first Friday of the month, like, because I'm a high school teacher, we gather all of our teaching staff into our chapel in the morning, and we have our morning briefing, which is every Friday, but we also have an extended morning prayer as well. And so we create prayers for the particular time. And so it's Advent. And so I was talking to the staff about the second reading in the second Sunday of Advent, which is one of Paul's letters to the Romans, I think it was. And he talks about gathering up all the things that the scriptures have taught in the past to today, and creating a community which is tolerant of each other, and how God blesses people who refuse to give up. And I focused on this about the refusing to give up. And it's in the context of how Advent now, and this is, you know how Black Friday is kind of an American thing, right?
Yeah.
Well, it's not anymore. Now Black Friday's, it's plastered all over here. So.
I shopped. I'm sorry, I have to say.
There you go. Yeah. But what happened was the week before that first Friday prayer, on the previous Friday, I was driving my family to my in-laws' house for dinner on Friday night, which is something that we normally do on Fridays. And as we were driving along on the freeway, or is it called the highway in other parts of the world? But anyway, on the freeway.
Motorway, there's many motorway, different versions.
Yeah, whatever. Yeah, yeah, that's it. The traffic on the slip lanes, you know, the turnoffs, was building up. And we thought maybe there was an accident on the freeway we needed to get off. So we turned off and got stuck in even worse traffic as the freeway traffic zoomed by us. There was nothing wrong with the freeway. It just happened to be that the Fountain Gate Shopping Center, which is like this massive shopping center near my house, all the cars were going there because of these massive Black Friday sales. We were like, oh, we got stuck in it. So I managed to navigate our way out of it and get back onto the freeway. And when I got to Isabel's parents' house, I opened up my Google Maps and there were these four red lines around Fountain Gate showing indicating the traffic was
really
bad.
Haven't they heard of the internet? That's where I did all my shopping.
Well, there must have been some super massive discounts that people knew about. Yeah, if you were physically there.
Maybe.
Yeah, so I was thinking about that. I was thinking, you know, you've got Black Friday, which basically starts Friday but goes into the weekend. They've tacked on Cyber Monday, which is then now when you've got all the technology discounts online. There's Giving Tuesday, which we don't really hear much about on the internet because I'm not sure if anyone has enough money to give after all those sales.
No, you're pretty much done by Monday night.
Yeah. I think so, yeah. And then I was saying to the staff.
Sunday afternoon I was done.
You were done by then, yeah. But I was saying to the staff that, that you know, the next day everyone opens up their credit card bills and it's what have I done Wednesday? You know what I mean? But what I did was we had an Advent wreath set up in the chapel as well and I walked up to it and I said, but look at this, faith, hope, peace and joy. Again, I got them in the wrong order. But I said, these gifts of Advent are free. They cost you nothing to receive and they cost nothing to you to give to everyone else as well. And you can give it as many times as you want. And what you're doing is you're giving, you know, the Christ child of, you know, of Christmas to other people. And it's, you know, and there's no regret. If you give it, you don't fall into any debt if you share it with anyone else. And like I said, you can share it as much as you want. And I was saying it has a much bigger effect on other people sharing those than, you know, than the TV you bought for yourself or the, you know, or the next electronic gizmo that you bought for a family member that you love.
Or shoes
or whatever it is. Yeah. And not that I'm against buying electronic gizmos for family members because I can remember buying our brother Paul years ago a self-stirring mug, you know, the one you press the button and it stirs itself. Yeah. I was quite proud of that one. Yeah. And I think it was a Star Trek mug too, so it was even better. But anyway, but that was the message that I had for the staff just to sort of reorient everyone to Advent. So I've said quite a bit, Caroline, so I might throw it over to you. Any thoughts, reflections on Advent as we travel through it and get closer to Christmas or anything that you do at home that's important for your family?
Yeah, well, you know what? I'm going to borrow from Father Michael his sermon this morning, actually.
Yeah, sure.
So we're recording on a Sunday afternoon. And when we went to Mass this morning and he was talking about how Christmas, you know, we're waiting. And most of us are waiting, you know, you can equate all the gifts, all the food, all the excitement, all these superficial things with flowers, say. You know, we love flowers. They're beautiful to look at, but they don't last very long. But what comes after the flowers on a plant? Fruit. And it's the fruit that we're really after because the fruit is the nourishing part and the fruit is able to give life again. You plant the seed and the fruit is Jesus himself. So that's the real meaning of Christmas, not all the flowers. The flowers are pretty and everything, but it's really the fruit that we are after in Christmas. And, you know, I had Frankie with me this morning. I left Harry at home because his cough is quite bad. So I just went to Mass with Frankie. And so it was the second Advent, week of Advent that we were celebrating today. And, you know, he loves the candles. So we, you know, he got to see the lighting of the second candle. And We have been given a new nativity set by someone in the parish, mm-hmm. which is beautiful, amazing, it's such a beautiful set. So some of our parishioners were finishing setting that up this morning. And, you know, Frankie was in awe of it as well, you know, being a small child and seeing this amazing set, and he saw the star and he went, "Mom, that's the star, you know, Bethlehem." I thought, yeah, it is. Very good, Frankie, you know, and he was telling me what he learned. You know, they've been learning about Christmas and Advent at school. So for me, you know, it's really about having the interaction with my children and, you know, reading the Bible passages and talking about all these things as Frankie, especially because he's more aware, is able to understand and beginning to understand what Christmas is actually all about. On the other side, the boys were given two Advent calendars, and so this is the flower part of it. So we're enjoying opening, you know, a new little door every day, and they take out a chocolate and we count down to Christmas that way. So there are some very special things that we do. I'm planning to bring out my nativity set. I'm a bit slow this year because we've been unwell this week. I will get that out as well. I like to set up our little nativity set. I guess I'm in a little bit of limbo this year though, because we're actually finishing off building a house, and not sure whether we're actually going to be in for Christmas. So I don't know how far to decorate our house this year. So do I decorate here or decorate there? So, but that's just the flower part. It's really not a big deal. But the substance is there, you know. I'm able to discuss all these things with my children and, you know, take them to Mass. And, you know, we're having carols coming up, carols night for our parish next Friday night.
Yay,
which is
that's right.
Going to be really fun. And then we've got the school presentation on the Wednesday after, which is they always have carols and stuff then as well. So, yeah, it's all about the whole season, you know, the preparation, the waiting for, you know, the fruit that is Jesus. You know, it's all, you know, it's just such a nice time of year. This is probably my favorite time of year, I have to say, you know, not just Christmas Day itself, but the whole run up to it.
Yeah, definitely. I agree too. And I guess what I'd be saying to people listening is, and I forgot what the date will be when our podcast comes out, but it'll be closer to Christmas than it is now. Actually, I'd be thinking it'd be the third Sunday of Advent by that time. So what I'd say is, wherever we are in Advent, don't think that you haven't got enough time to use it for preparation. So if you're listening to this and you think, yeah, I've been too busy and I haven't given it much attention, launch yourself into it now. Even if you've got a few days left, whenever you're listening, start doing some preparation for Advent, because like you said, Caroline, you know, the fruit of Advent is Christ in a way. You know, that's the fruit that we're looking for. And it's a good chance just to recenter again, although every day we try, but the season here is a gift for us to recenter on this Christ who we anticipate. We anticipate him in our hearts at Christmas time, but we anticipate him at some undisclosed time in the future when he comes again. I think it's a beautiful time for us to remember that. And when we, you know, put baby Yoda aside for a second and put baby Jesus there as the center, there's a lot of beautiful things that can come out of that.
This is Dom Bettinelli, CEO of SQPN, with a special message. The StarQuest Network is fulfilling its mission to explore the intersection of faith and pop culture, and in the past year we've reached stunning new heights. Our programs are reaching broad new audiences with a message that helps us discern good entertainment, make sense of the world, and share the gospel with others. We continue to launch new shows and bring back great shows. We just relaunched Secrets of Star Wars, which comes at the perfect moment to capture the excitement over the new show, The Mandalorian, and the climax of the new Star Wars movies. The support of our audience is vital to this work and has helped us grow closer to meeting our financial obligations. For that, we are very grateful. But we still need to close the gap. Every new gift extends our deadline, but until we eliminate our deficits, the future of StarQuest and your favorite shows remain in question. This is why it's crucial we hear from you this Advent and Christmas, the time when nonprofits receive most of their support for the year. If you're already a supporter of StarQuest, we are very grateful, and we ask you to prayerfully consider increasing your support at this time. If you are not yet a supporter, please become one now. We urgently need your help and every gift counts. Could you give $15 or even just $10 per month? That lets us provide more than 40 hours of professionally produced shows with compelling content. We have special thank you gifts for donors at several giving levels. If you are a business owner or just want to provide a leadership level of support, we now have a special giving level for sponsors, like in public broadcasting. For $500 per month, you or your business can sponsor one of the shows on our network. Listeners will hear a message in every episode thanking you for your sponsorship and giving your website. We'll also have your name and link on the SQPN webpage and in the show notes of every episode during your sponsorship. Whatever level of support you can offer, whether large or small, please show your support for SQPN this Christmas, and remember that your gifts are tax deductible. Just go to sqpn.com/give. That's sqpn.com/give. And may God bless you and yours as we approach the celebration of our Lord's birth.
I think we've talked quite about that enough. You did mention the Star of Bethlehem, so I think that's a good time for us to move on. So why don't we talk about science?
Ah, what a fine day for science.
You have any hobbies?
I collect spores, molds, and fungus.
Can you reverse the polarity?
I'll do my best.
So again, we talked about keeping everything Christmas themed this time round. So Caroline, we wanted to talk about the possible science of the Star of Bethlehem. This is being the star that that the wise men followed or saw at least to find where Jesus was had been born, or at least some great sign of something great that was going on in a particular part of the world, and they followed it and found Christ. So Caroline, why don't you tell us about some of the theories, all right, the possible theories that could prove that there was a star or a something in the sky at the time of Jesus which heralded his birth?
Well, the beginning of this is the Bible passage, actually, that we find that talks about the Star of Bethlehem. So why don't we go through and read that passage first and we get a bit of a background, and then I can start with the theories. What do you reckon?
Sure. Go for it.
So the mention of the Star of Bethlehem is in Matthew chapter 2, verses 1 to 12. So I'll read the first half, Lindsay, and you can go for reading the second half.
Yep.
In the time of King Herod, after Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea, wise men from the east came to Jerusalem asking, "Where is the child who has been born King of the Jews? For we observed his star at its rising, and have come to pay him homage." When King Herod heard this, he was frightened, and all Jerusalem with him. And calling together all the chief priests and scribes of the people, he inquired of them where the Messiah was to be born. They told him, "In Bethlehem of Judea, for so it has been written by the prophet, 'And you, Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are by no means least among the rulers of Judah, and from you shall come a ruler who is to shepherd my people Israel.'"
Then Herod secretly called for the wise men and learned from them the exact time when the star had appeared. Then he sent them to Bethlehem, saying, "Go and search diligently for the child, and when you have found him, bring me word so that I may go also and pay him homage." When they had heard the king, they set out, and there ahead of them went the star that they had seen at its rising, until it stopped over the place where the child was. When they saw that the star had stopped, they were overwhelmed with joy. On entering the house, they saw the child with Mary, his mother, and they knelt down and paid him homage. Then, opening their treasure chests, they offered him gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh. And having been warned in a dream not to return to Herod, they left for their own country by another road.
Excellent. So that gives us the background of where we get the Star of Bethlehem. So basically, the three wise men saw a star in the sky that was indicating to them either that something was going to happen or was leading to them to the place where something significant was happening. And obviously, it was very significant for them to want to travel from their homeland to this new country to meet the new king or the messiah. So it's been highly speculated, you know, forever. What is the Star of Bethlehem? How did it come about? You know, how did it show the wise men where, you know, Jesus was? How did it indicate this, you know, that he was to be born or he was born or where he was born? So a couple of, you know, so we'll just go through like the most popular theories.
Sure.
And I love this because this is just where I am, where faith meets science. It's fantastic. I love backing up faith with science and vice versa. It's just, they just work so well together. So, okay, so the first possibility is a comet. So, you know, you see it's basically an icy ball of, you know, rock ball flying through the sky. It's stuck in an orbit around the sun and it has a tail, and it can be seen with the naked eye. The only one that we know about is Halley's Comet. I think most people have heard of a Halley's Comet, and it has an orbit that, you know, goes, it comes around about 74 to 79 years. And it doesn't appear that often. That last appeared here in our sky in 1986, and the next one's due in 2061. And this, you can actually see it with the naked eye in the sky at nighttime, but it doesn't actually last that long. So it's only maybe a few days or weeks, you know, it just passes by basically. In the early BC, so it was maybe visible around 12 BC. I've got a few numbers here, 4 BC, 24 BC, you know, depending on, you know, records. Chinese astronomers and Korean astronomers were recorded to see it in about 4 BC. So that's quite close to when we think Jesus was born. Another theory is that there could have been a supernova happening at the time in the sky. So basically, you know, that's an explosion of a star. So it kind of, you know, the star runs out of fuel. Yes, I have to throw in some science background. It cools off, collapses in on itself, pressure and temperature go out of whack, and basically the star explodes. And this can be seen with the naked eye in the sky. But I don't think it actually travels across the sky, say, like a comet would. Lindsay, what do you think? You want to throw in a couple of other theories?
All right. So I've got one theory, and now I don't know how true this theory is, but for years and years in the past, we used to teach, we still do, but there was a particular documentary we used to use to start conversations about, you know, Jesus and could the story of Jesus be true? Like, could Jesus have been a historical figure? I mean, yes, he was. But considering my clientele, you know, Catholic and non-Catholic students, we just open up a discussion about it. So the documentary we used is called the Son of God series, and it's three episodes, and it goes over different aspects of Jesus' life. And what's interesting about it is that it's by a BBC journalist who has no faith, but he wants to investigate and see if it's probable that the Jesus story could have, you know, the events of Jesus' life could have happened. So, and he picks up on some of the key ones. So there's an 8-minute segment where he talks about Jesus' birth. I just want to add, by the way, that this documentary, I'm not sure if you can find it anywhere online anymore. It was made in the early 2000s. It wasn't filmed in HD. And the other reason I have it is because we have an archive in our teacher's online thing and someone happened to throw it in there. So I'm not sure. If you type in Son of God series BBC, maybe it might come up. But I'm not sure.
Not sure if I could find it. I had a look, but
yeah, it's very difficult.
Found other things.
Yeah, and I have to stress that we don't use it as this is the fact of Jesus' life, but this is a, you know, but this is what a secular guy did when he investigated. And it's good because we start with a secular perspective and then we go into a Catholic perspective and we fill in all the blanks. But this is what his investigation of the Bethlehem Star found out. He visited some astronomers and theological astronomers as well, so people with, you know, backgrounds in theology and science, and he was talking about, or they were talking to him about how with mathematical models we can map where stars of today were and planets and so on, where they are now, where they were thousands of years ago, and, you know, by mapping their trajectories using maths, and where they will be you know, in thousands of years and so on, just by following their pathways. So he was saying that in his investigation, in his discussions with them, they were talking about how the planet Jupiter at some points in its sort of, you know, journey around the solar system, it can appear to be in the constellation of Aries. And this apparently for astrologers was a sign that a king was going to be born. So they kind of interpreted it that way. And what happened was they used this modeling that I talked about before to see if Jupiter could have been in Aries around the time of Jesus' birth. And it turns out that there's a possibility that it could have been. So he talks about how the modern calendar that we have now was put together by a monk and scholar called Denis the Little, who calculated the dates by looking at the reigns of kings. And he said that modern scholars have found that Denis the Little is probably close to half a dozen years off in his calculations in putting the calendar together. So scholars have debated when Jesus was born exactly. Most don't agree that it was, you know, 1 BC. Some say it's before or a few years after. Now, that's the debate for the ages to have. But he says in this documentary, it's possible that Jesus was born in 6 BC when Jupiter did appear like a star in the sky. So what happens, and here's me trying to explain science, so here's the part where it goes all funny.
But, I'm enjoying this.
There's a time where Jupiter and Saturn and the sun and the moon can all kind of align in a sense to appear like they're in Aries, you know, like the constellation of Aries. And apparently for ancient astrologers, this was the sign of the birth of a great king. And what happens is, in this particular event, is that as the moon kind of eclipses in the morning, and the morning star, Jupiter, is quite bright. It can be seen very, very brightly in the sky, in the morning sky. And what he says is interesting is that some of the biggest astrologers were from the east, from areas like Persia and Babylon, all east of Judea. And they could have seen this bright, bright morning star, a Jupiter morning star, and then followed or moved towards where it was indicating to see if a great king had been born, if something great had happened in that area. I looked at one of Jimmy Akin's articles about this, what could it mean we've seen his star in the east, because that doesn't make sense because they're from the east. And Jimmy Akin says you could, and I stress could, read "we have seen his star in the east" to mean that they were in the east when they saw his star, when they saw the star. So I'm not saying that this theory is correct, but I'm just saying this is a very fascinating theory that goes with some of the ones that you've mentioned. But Caroline, you said you've got a theory that you like the most. So why don't you share this fourth one with us?
So the next one would be the conjunction of Jupiter with Venus. Okay, so this includes two, well, they look like stars in the sky, but planets. So both planets will travel from east to west as part of their normal orbit as viewed from the Earth. So, and just in my observations anyway, Venus tends to travel a lot more slowly in our perspective than Jupiter. And we see, so particularly at this time of year, I've been seeing Venus setting, and it's very extremely bright star in the evening. And over the course of the year, I've been seeing Jupiter travel from the east over to the west. Mm. Now, every few years, there will be a conjunction of the two planets. So the conjunctions means that they pretty much line up together from our field of view, and they eventually come together and look like one big star. Now, this year it happened on January 22nd. Unfortunately, it was a very cloudy night and I couldn't see it. And the next one will happen on February 11th, 2021. So on average, it will happen once a year. Okay, so here's my theory.
Hang on. Okay, let me do this. Let's make this a mysterious world thing. So Caroline, yes. What's your bottom line?
My bottom line is that it could have been the conjunction of Jupiter and Venus indicating to the three wise men where or which direction to travel to go and see the new king. So here we go. So in my observations, this because I'm a backyard astronomer, okay, I look for the planets specifically because those are the astronomical bodies I love the most, our planets. So over the course of the year, Jupiter has been, it started in the east, okay? It has slowly headed over to the west. Now, a few nights ago, Jupiter and Venus were very close together. They didn't have a conjunction. But imagine if, so the three wise men know this thing may happen. You know, I reckon they would have known the stars quite well. And they knew that this year this may have happened. So there's Jupiter. There it is. It's in the east. We've seen the star in the east. Doesn't mean anything's happened in the east, but it's starting in the east.
Mm.
So they follow it over. And they know that where it's going to have the conjunction, can you see my hand gestures?
Yep, I'm following your hand.
the listeners are missing out. So where the conjunction is going to occur is where we need to go and where we need to find the new king.
Ah.
So in my opinion, the conjunction, it's not just where the star is, but where they need to follow to go to find him. And there you go. That's my theory.
Well, thank you, everyone, for listening to Catholics of Oz Mysterious World. Oh, you know what? What we should do? We should do this again this time next year and see if Jimmy Akin can come on and give us his theory. Because I know that he's got.
Yes.
Yeah, I'd love to. Yeah, I know he's
that
got a lot
so
of things about the Star of Bethlehem, and I'd love to hear his perspective as well. That'd be great. Yeah,
yes.
Or just to tell us that we're completely wrong. That's okay too.
It could be that as well. I mean, yes.
Yeah. All right. Before we move on to our listeners, what theories have you heard about the Star of Bethlehem? What could it possibly have been that heralded the birth of Jesus into the world? What theories have you heard? Which one gels the most with the biblical account according to you? We'd love to hear that and see what you have to say. But let's pick it up from there. And why don't we move on now? Because we want to talk about movies and entertainment.
Get your delusions, laser brain.
I'm Batman.
This is not what we came here to do.
No, but it's what I'm going to do.
I have a plan.
You've got a plan.
I have part of a plan.
Are you not entertained? Are you not entertained?
So in particular, Caroline and I had a discussion about this over the last week and a bit, and we wanted to talk about some, I guess, Christmas films that we find are good ones to watch yourself or especially with other people to help you prepare for Christmas. And we've decided to talk about, you know, one movie that we think is quite funny, so a bit of Christmas joy, but also pick a movie that that has merits, which really gets your thoughts going to where they should be going. So why don't we start with our comedy picks? And Caroline, why don't you tell us about the movie Elf?
Okay, I'm already laughing. All right, so this is a film, I'm sure most people have watched it, starring Will Ferrell, a very famous comedic actor. Now, this is probably one of the only films that children can watch of his. He has many films, but
this is
probably... I really enjoyed this one of his. So he's very funny, very silly, and this really shines through in the film. My children love it, especially Frankie. He dies laughing. He has a cough at the moment as well. He actually had a coughing fit yesterday because of some silly thing that happened. But anyway, we recovered. So this is a story about an elf. He ended up in the North Pole with Santa. He was accidentally brought by Santa to the North Pole in the big Santa sack. And nobody has had the heart to tell him that he was actually a human person and not an elf. So he grew extraordinarily larger than the actual elves in the North Pole. And at some point, he's told, look, the reason, you know, because he wasn't performing as well as the other elves making toys and things, you know, they would do produce thousands of an item in a day and he could only do like 85, and he didn't do his job very well. And he had the feeling that, oh, maybe I don't belong here. There's something wrong. And then it was broken to him, look, you're not actually an elf. You're a human. And the story was told, you were, this is your father and this was your mother. And, you know, maybe you should go and find them and find your identity. So he's like, oh, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So anyway, he makes his way over to New York where his father is. Now, his father, Santa tells him, is on the naughty list because, which Will Ferrell couldn't believe, you know, it's like, oh, no, my dad's on the naughty list. Look, it's all silly, but it's very funny. So he ends up in New York. He finds his father. His father is on the naughty list because he's the head of a publishing company. He doesn't do his job very well. The books don't publish very well. They're missing pages. He signs off them. The only thing he cares about is making money and not really the content of the product that they're trying to sell. Anyway, there's a lot of backstory to that. So Will Ferrell, the elf, connects with his father in the end. There's a lot of silly, funny things that happen. Some of it's very slapstick, you know. It's just, it's hilarious. You need to watch it. And in the meantime, Santa's having a problem because there is a decline in the amount of Christmas spirit in the general population. And his sleigh apparently works on Christmas spirit. So as he's flying into New York, it's Christmas Eve, his sleigh drops to the ground and he can't start it again. So I've skipped quite a bit, but in the end, Will Ferrell and the friends he's made and the family all end up helping Santa to get back this Christmas spirit. His father finds the real a meaning of Christmas. He finds that family is important and not just work. And Santa's sleigh works and everybody's happy. And it's, you know, in the end, it's just a happy Christmas family time, which is, I guess, it's a really good ending to a, you know, a funny Hollywood slapstick kind of film. That's a laugh out loud, a real laugh out loud crying, you know, movie. So
Honorable mention goes to the scene where he was, I think he uses a trampoline or a couch to try and jump onto the top of the tree to put the star in.
Yes.
It's like crashing through the tree. Yeah, I cry laughing.
He jumps onto the tree.
It's so ridiculous.
He and the tree fall down. Another favorite part is
so
when
Looney
he walks
Tunes,
into
but it
New
makes me laugh.
It is.
Yeah,
it
it's
is.
So silly.
The other favorite part that made Frankie, that's the bit where he coughed and couldn't stop coughing, laughing. But there's another part where he arrives in New York and Santa beforehand tells him, look, if you see chewing gum lying around, it's not edible. Don't eat it. It's not free candy. But what does Will Ferrell do? He sees all this chewed chewing gum stuck to handrails and he picks one up and he eats it. And he's like, oh, this is really good. And then he just picks all the chewing gum off the rails and eats it. So that's the kind of thing we're talking about. Yeah.
Did you hear that noise? Did you hear that noise, Caroline? That was listeners switching off our podcast when you gave
Sorry.
Them that
I promise it's funny when you watch it.
It is, yeah. And look, most people have probably seen it, but it's a good one to throw in terms of Christmas comedy, I guess.
Yeah, it is.
My comedy one, like no surprise, and I think we've all, just about everyone's seen this film, is Home Alone. But why Home Alone? I showed it to my oldest son, Damien. He was 9 years old last year. For the first time before Christmas, I thought now is a good time to introduce him to it. His cousins have actually seen it already, and they're, what are they, 7 and 5?
So, yes, yeah. My boys love it. Yeah.
Yeah. There's a couple of things. Yes, you know, it's slapstick, laugh out loud comedy. And it, for me, and I don't know if people agree with this or not, but for me, it actually doesn't age. Like, it doesn't get old.
Oh, it's really good. Yeah.
It's actually rewatchable. It's quite rewatchable at Christmas time. And I remember
it's
being
a classic,
young and watching
I think.
It. Yeah, many, many times. It is a classic. But there's two reasons why. You know, the comedy is really funny. You know, the idea of a boy who's been left behind as his family, like extended family, everyone goes overseas and leaves him alone. And he has to find inventive ways to, you know, to live, which he does. He does things which subvert our expectations. He's quite clever in how he you know, he does the shopping, looks after the house, cracks onto the plot that, you know, these guys are going to try and rob his house. And, you know, there's the great scene with the, you know, where he puts on the gangster film, you know, when yes. It's got that keep the change, you filthy animal. That's the yes. classic line, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. But the other good thing I think is, you know, when a, you know, it's good for kids in a sense that early on he says, I made my family disappear. And he thinks it's a really good thing. Like, you know, can you remember the night before he gets really angry, he cracks, he goes, oh, I don't want any of you, you know, whatever it was he says, you
know.
And he's like, I made my family disappear. And he thinks it's a good thing. But then he starts to learn that it's not. Now, maybe it's unfortunate that he makes a wish. No, actually, does he say it in church or is it a wish to Santa? No, he tells Santa he wants his family back. Although there is a scene where he goes to church when he feels quite alone, which yes, at least is
yeah.
there.
Where he meets that old man, set. Isn't it?
Yeah, that's right, yeah. And so I do like the theme of family through the old man who... teaches young Kevin McAllister about the importance of family, you know, by talking about what he's lost until he reunites with his son again and his son and his family. And also the idea that Kevin learns to appreciate his family because they're gone. Even his older brother, who's a bully and a jerk and all that, you know, he even wants his older brother back. So I think it's good for kids to see that idea. Now, it's not a Christian film, and it doesn't emphasize the Christian message of the birth of Christ. But, you know, in talking with your kids, I think there are easy links to make, which I think is really important. So now let's talk about a film with a message. So one that we think does help us to understand the Christmas message a little bit more. And so, Caroline, I think you were going to talk about the Disney version of A Christmas Carol. And I think Jim Carrey is the protagonist, but as a computer animated Ebenezer Scrooge. Go for it.
Yeah, so I think it was made in 2009, if my memory's right.
Let's go with
that. And yeah, it's digitally animated, obviously based off the actual actors. So it had, Jim Carrey, Colin Firth were the two big ones that were in it. And, you suggested to me to watch this one. I was actually trying to find the Mickey Mouse version, with Scrooge McDuck as Scrooge.
Scrooge! It's Christmas Day!
Which is actually really good, but I couldn't find it again to watch it. So I think we used to have it on videotape or something. I love this. It is, you know, it's written by Charles Dickens, the story, and the... creators have actually stuck true to the text. So all the script is taken from the book. It's the costume, it's set in the Victorian period. So when Charles Dickens was living and, you know, it really captures the difficulties of the poor at the time and the fragility of their state in life because it takes nothing for them to, you know, not be able to eat or, you know, to become very ill and not recover from that. You know, like the character Tiny Tim, he's on the verge of dying because his family's so poor because Scrooge, you know, won't pay Bob Cratchit enough money for his family to live. So that it's the classic story of Scrooge. The three spirits come to him, Christmas, past, present, and future come to him. The first one is Bob Marley. He's Bob Marley. Is that his name?
Jacob Marley. Do that too, don't worry. Jacob
How bad? Marley. Jacob Marley. That didn't sound right. Jacob Marley. Yeah.
And he hasn't got dreadlocks either. Him.
No, but he has a lot of bandages and bad hair.
Yes,
but
that's
anyway.
Right.
he appears to him first as... you know, telling him, look what happened to me. All I did in life was care about making money and I've wasted my life. I could have traveled. I could have done a lot of things. I could have made more of my life. And what did I do? I just sat in our office just counting money all my life. And he's in chains and he's chained to money boxes and he's suffering and, you know, he's wailing and he's saying, you should change. You have to change your ways. You cannot be so miserly anymore.
Yeah. He's got that great line when Scrooge says to him, but, you know, how can you be spending your afterlife, so your eternity like this, tormented, when when you were such a good man of business, and he screams back, "Mankind was my business." Yes. You know, there's all that.
It's
a powerful
business,
line. Yeah.
He gets really animated, really upset when he says,
"Charity should have been my business."
That's not ripping people off.
Yeah.
Exactly. Oh, that was really good. That part. Yeah. That struck a chord with me for sure. And then the next ones, he's shown the Christmas of his past when he was a child. How he was left in the boarding house. Mm. His father didn't want to take him home at Christmas. One year his sister managed to convince his father that he would go home for Christmas. So he was damaged as a young child. And then it shows, you know, when he was grown up a bit and he had an apprenticeship and he had a lovely tie, you know, he learnt the business from his master. I've forgotten the name now. And
if it comes back to me, I'll tell you.
Yes. But, you know, he was a good man.
Fezziwig.
He wasn't amazing.
Fezziwig.
Correct. Fezziwig, That's it. Yes. And you had a lovely scene of them celebrating Christmas, you know, Fezziwig put on a big dance for everyone. And that's where he met his future wife. And then towards the end of this
scene, it shows almost wife.
That's correct. So then it shows a scene where him and his spouse-to-be break up because basically he can't let go of money and she doesn't want just for him to be, you know, she was happy being poor. You know, she said, "We met in poverty and I was happy. But now we have money and you're just, you know, counting your money." And he couldn't let go. So she said, "I release you, Ebenezer, I release you." He tried to go and maybe call her back, but then it was just he couldn't do it and he let her go.
Yeah, so I forgot if this is in the film. Sorry to interrupt. Yeah, I remember because I've read the text a few times. But two things that strike me is one is that she tells him that she fears that his heart has replaced her with a golden idol.
Yes.
You know, his worship
correct,
of money.
Yes.
And he's shown in the text, and I forgot if it's in the film, but he's shown her married to another man and happy with children. And I forgot if it's in the text.
It's not in the movie.
But it's definitely in the text. Yeah.
Yes,
so add that real kick to him, you know, as he's watching
That's it. Yeah. So, yeah, he makes his choice definitely then. He chooses the trajectory that his life would go from that point definitely. So, excuse me. And then after that, there's the next section where he's shown basically the end part where he's died, or they're talking about a man who's died and they're making fun of him, you know, "Oh, will I go to his funeral? Oh, well, if there's a lunch on, I'll go to his funeral."
Yes.
You know, and, you know, his servant that he had in his house, you know, they were saying, you know, "He had a garment on for when he died, but I took it off him and I kept it and we put the old one on him and we've taken his bed curtains and we've kept those." And, you know, so basically because he was so cruel to other people, there was no kindness shown to him after he'd passed away.
Yeah. And what's interesting as well is that, and I remember this because it's so haunting to me, is that they desecrated his body because they took off the clothes that he was sleeping in to sell them. That's what, you know, they pawned them off
at the shop.
So which means they stripped him naked, if you know what I mean. So there's there's not even any respect for his remains, which is, you know, which would be frightening to the people reading, but it's still frightening and disturbing to us as well. That lack of care and compassion is really emphasized all the way throughout I'm thinking of the text, sorry, it's, you know, sorry, but
no,
definitely the film as well.
No, well, there is the part too where he's, you know, he's broken down by the end of this and he said, "Some kindness, show me some mercy or kindness." I forgot the word he used exactly. "Please show me some." And then I think I forgot exactly where it goes there. Oh, yeah, then it goes to Bob Cratchit's family celebrating Christmas in the future.
Yeah.
And it shows how they have love for each other and compassion for each other, you know, and that was the kindness that he was shown. not towards him, but between their family.
Was that in the present or the future? I think it was the present.
So that was the future.
Was okay,
the,
right. It,
they were showing the future.
Oh, so
of
the
how
text is a little bit
celebrate.
Different. It's the film then. Yeah, yeah. Okay.
We're in the film. Yeah. I guess, you know, they're taking a bit of artistic liberty.
Yeah.
But
in the text, and again, sorry, I keep going back to the text, but
that's okay.
He says, "Show me some kindness associated with my name." And it goes to a couple with a who the husband comes home and tells his wife, you know, they've got some good news.
That's in there too. Yes, you're correct.
They're not
going to
get
kicked
out of their house because Scrooge had died. So they're actually relieved that Scrooge is dead because they don't. They're not going to have to worry about their debt for a while. And so that's the only kindness associated with his name is that he, you know, thank God he died. You know, it's Which is, you know, the genre of the text was, it was meant to be a, at the time, it was a ghost story, like a horror, you know, to horrify the readers about how terrible and uncaring their society had become. And so Dickens wasn't necessarily Christian. I think he actually had some anti-church sentiments in a way as well. I could be wrong. I'm happy to be corrected on that. And he
does- There was a line, actually, about- The clergy or something.
Yes, there was criticism.
There was.
I'm going back a couple of years, but there was criticism because there was a Reverend Malthus who he refers to, and that's where that line about the surplus population comes from. Reverend Malthus had proposed, I think, in an essay to let the surplus population die off. You know, the poor served no useful purpose, so they were better off dead because they weren't useful in society. And
I was going to say, and in this movie, those words came out of Scrooge's mouth as well.
Yes. Yeah, and that's right. Yeah. He mentions him. And then the ghost of Christmas present for memory repeats it to him.
Yes.
And it's like a kick in the tail, isn't it?
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's
it's
these
a
were
real
your words.
Comment.
Yeah.
That's right. It's a real comment on society at the time because the gap between the rich and the poor was really vast. You know, the poor, if they could, I mean, I've watched a few documentaries on Victorian times and it was very tough for the poor. If you couldn't work, you know, you were unwell or old or infirm, you'd go to the workhouse, the poorhouse.
That's right, yeah.
And it would be, no kindness would be shown. You basically work all day, every day until you die, basically.
Yeah, to work off a debt as well, not to earn money, but to work off a debt that you couldn't afford.
Right.
Yeah,
that's right. You could be easily living on the street with nothing. Work, if you were lucky, you would have to try and go and get work every day. You'd have to try and find a different work. You'd be working, so hard till exhaustion every day and get paid not much for it at all.
Yeah, even children were exploited for work as
children
well.
Children had to work, yes. Yeah. It was a very difficult time, whereas the rich were kind of, they thought the poor deserved it because of something they'd done. You know, it's like, well, it's not their own fault, they're poor. Rather than helping the poor, you know, for example, Scrooge epitomizes this. Instead of helping the poor, he kind of condemns the poor and says, well, they're so poor and have nothing, they should just die.
And in fact, he says, when the portly gentleman, as they're described in the text, come in to offer him, to ask him for donations.
That's
he
right.
He says, what, aren't there any workhouses? Aren't there prisons which serve a useful purpose already
and prisons,
for the poor?
Correct. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. That's right. Yeah, yeah, so the poor were seen as, the poor were seen as dirt, basically, not human, not worth a kind word, anything, you know. And I was actually shocked to learn of this, you know, even the servants, they were worked from like 5 a.m. in the morning till very late at night. They would start off that some of them would come from the country, you know, all healthy and full of vigor and everything, start as a servant and end up very sickly because they'd be put in a basement to sleep and they would just be working all day and all night, no rest, hardly any food, you know. So they were treated very badly.
Yeah, and can I say that the film and the written story are not, they're not anti-rich stories, if that makes sense.
They do
criticize attitudes amongst some of the rich, against the poor, but it criticizes bad attitudes because there are poor people who are depicted as doing terrible things as well. For example, when they raid Scrooge and loot his house and sell his stuff and speak very poorly about him. So there's actually, it's a criticism of just a lack of solidarity, you know, standing with each other, you know, a broken community that values things over the dignity of the person. There's a lot of that, a lot of those undertones. I mean, the rich do get a bit of a slap, but I don't know if it's an equal slap that the rich and poor get, but there's certainly a slap at both, against anyone who has a really poor attitude anyway.
Yeah. I mean, if you see they show Scrooge's nephew, who seemed like a very kind person, and even though Scrooge was a horrible uncle to him, he still invited him to Christmas Eve dinner, but Scrooge, you know, in the first round, before it happened anyway, he rejected it. He said no. He didn't want to go to dinner, and you know, and his nephew was upset with that. And he didn't seem like a particularly mean person. He seemed like a happy, fun person who liked to celebrate Christmas with family. So, I mean, this is particularly about Scrooge himself and what the epitome of a miserly, mean-spirited person. So, you know, obviously it's exaggerated because it's a literary, you know, fiction. But, you know, it all ends up well. You know, the lesson in the story, Scrooge ends up, you know, he has all this experience with the ghosts, and then he wakes up and he said, oh, I'm not dead. Good. I can change. Okay, good. So from that moment, he changes and he sees a kid in the street. He says, go buy me that biggest turkey. He sends it off to Bob Cratchit's house so they could have a nice turkey. He goes to that man where he said he didn't want to give any money to the poor, and he gives him a generous donation. He's kind to everyone in the street. He raises Bob Cratchit's salary. I think there's one version where he made him a partner, but I don't know if it
that's about right. Yeah, sort of. Yeah.
Yeah. So he changes his life and he becomes a completely different person. So for the remainder of his life, he's changed 180 degrees to what he was before, and is completely opposite, you know, in his ways. So, you know, in the end, it has a really good message. Like, it's not too late to change. You can change, yes, and you can do something positive for the world. And, you know, just to extend again, I know we're going a bit long, but because Frankie watched this with me, we had a discussion about generosity and, you know, and giving and all of that kind of thing. And, you know, I was telling him, you know, even if we don't have a lot of money that we can give to the poor, we can give a little bit. And if someone else gives a little bit, we all end up giving a nice, you know, an amount. So, for example, we had the food drive at school the other day. You know, they were able to go in casual clothes, not uniform, and we just donated, so like some pasta and cans of food and things like that. And but all together, everybody in the school giving all that food was going to make a difference in someone's life. So we had the discussion of how, you know, we can help even in a small way. Or, for example, they will have this same casual day and take a gold coin. So for us, it's a $2 or $1 coin. And, you know, all together they'd make up, you know, a certain amount and they could donate it to a charity. So that kind of discussion came out of watching this film, which I think was really positive, you know, for Frankie, and, you know, a good lesson to teach him. So, yes.
Yeah. I'll just to tie up a discussion about this particular film, there's one line which I like to exploit when I watch it with Damien, and I think this is the reason why I actually show him the film, because I know that there are different opinions in the Catholic world about whether we can use it as explaining the Christmas story, but there's one line that I always throw back as important, and it's when the ghost of Christmas present shows Scrooge the Cratchit's house, the Cratchit's Christmas lunch. And Bob Cratchit and Tiny Tim come back from church. And there's kind of the question about why Tiny Tim wants to go to church at Christmas time. And he says, and I'm going to paraphrase, I'm going to get this wrong, but he says, because if I go, people will see the one who was helped by the one who helped the blind see and the deaf speak. Now, I've butchered that line, but, you know, there's a beautiful representation of Christ to say this is what Christmas is all about. And maybe Dickens didn't intend that. I have no idea. But the thing is, I can exploit it for my own purposes with my children. I think it's useful for that.
Yeah. It worked very well. Yeah.
Yeah. I'd recommend that film. I actually wrote it off when it came out because I thought, oh, look, there's, you know, there's Jim Carrey and giant rats and he's flowing through tunnels and flying all over town. I thought, this is going to be rubbish. But I'm the same. I was shocked at actually how faithful to the text it actually is. And I've read the text about six times.
He did so well. And even his expression, like he just embodied that character so well. He just portrayed Scrooge so well. So, you know, it was excellent. Very well done.
Yeah. So my film with a message is another very obvious one, but I can't emphasize this one enough. And it is It's a Wonderful Life by, is it Frank Capra? Frank Capra, yeah. And I think I don't know how to talk about this film because it speaks to me on so many levels. And I think and what hit me is that I watched it with Damien one year when he was 6 years old, in the lead up to Christmas. And it's a black and white film. So to a child, to young people, it's not generally a film that they're going to sit down and watch. It's not filmed in HD. It's slow in some parts. And Damien was rapt from the beginning to end. And we had a really good chat about it. And every year since, he's wanted to watch it with me, and we've done exactly that. But the central message for me is this film says, what would the life of people around you be like if you hadn't been born? Because there's a stage in the film where George Bailey's life, it falls apart. Because his bank fails because he's cheated by another person, he's going to go to prison. He knows it. He's going to be arrested. His family's going to be disgraced. It was in a time when reputation was really important. He spent his whole life in the same small town, helping other people. When he had big plans to go and do things for himself, he would have been very successful and very rich if he had gone off and done his own thing. But in the end, he's always stopping to help other people because he finds himself in that circumstance. And then he ends up being the one who needs help because of what happens to him. And there's this scene, and in fact, I got all the RE classes to watch the last 40 minutes of the film in my school, like in the year 10, 11, and 12 students. And I got a lot of good feedback from the students, strangely enough, as well, from this old film. But it hits me, like, it's a kick in the guts when he goes home and he's yelling at his kids, he's telling his wife off, he's throwing all of those dreams and plans that he had, like kicking tables over and whatever. And then he goes to unfortunately end his life. He wants to throw himself off a bridge. That's what happens. He's saved by an angel. That's kind of like part of the plot of the story. There's an angel, Clarence, who's trying to earn his wings. And he'll do it by helping someone. But at one point he says to Clarence, well, maybe it would be better off if I hadn't been born. And he's quite emphatic about that. And so Clarence has a think about it and says, well, you know what? You've got your wish. All right. You've never been born. Well, and George Bailey is, maybe I've been, because he had a few drinks before. Maybe I'm drunk. I had some bad liquor or whatever. But he starts walking around town, and all these people who he had an impact on in one way, shape, or form, now he's had no impact on them, and their lives are ruined. The whole town, the small town he lived in, is ruined. It's become, very sleazy, very unhappy place to be. Where he had helped people build houses and, gave them loans that they could afford, which actually hurt his bank, there's a cemetery where his brother is buried, but that was his brother whose life he saved. But now because he's dead, his brother's life was never saved. And so he sees his life. He sees life if he hadn't been born, if he hadn't existed. And there's this scene which gets me every time. There's two prayers. One is when he's in a bar just before he tries to jump off the bridge, and he says, God, I'm not a man of prayer, but if you're around, show me the way, please show me the way. And then he gets punched in the mouth and he's like, yeah, that's probably the answer to my prayer. Typical, it doesn't work. And then he goes back to the bridge where he was about to jump off after finding everything was ruined. The tip of the iceberg was finding out that his wife never married, that she became, as they call it, an old maid who works in a library. A thing of that time. And he goes back, he's at the bridge and he's like, God, please, don't let it like this. Please, give me back my life. And he has his life back. And then he learns to celebrate, even though he's going to be arrested. He's like, oh, Merry Christmas. He's running around, Merry Christmas. Merry Christmas, you crummy old building. He goes home. He's like, Merry Christmas, you guys who are about to arrest me and whatever else. And he sees his wife and kids, he hugs them or whatever. And then the part of the film which is beautiful is that everyone in the town, like they haven't got much money, but each of them just chips in a little bit and they manage to raise the money that he needs in order to pay back the bank. what he owes them so that he doesn't go down for fraud. And I think it's just a beautiful Christmas movie because of the God element that's in there. I don't know if the director was necessarily a Christian or a Catholic or anything like that, but there's this powerful undercurrent of God being along there with our journey, and that we should really appreciate what we have, because our lives are wonderful. Every breath is a wonderful breath, even in the worst moments of our lives.
The
importance of community, if we can build good communities, we're always going to be there for each other. And it strikes me as very much like what the early Christians are going through when they're being persecuted, but they're still there for each other. So there's a lot of power in that. And, you know, now look, the center of Christmas is Christ, but there is, you know, what does Christ then mean? And, you know, there's a lot of things that he means theologically, but, you know, in the sense of where we are on earth and what we're doing in the here and now, part of what we should be doing apart from praying for each other and, you know, and trying to make our lives as holy as possible, part of that holiness is what we do with other people around us, you know, how we respect their dignity and how we build them up and how we have the humility to let them build us up when we're suffering as well. So it's a powerful movie, and there's 100 billion things I think that you could find. And I think it's definitely worth watching with your families in the lead up to Christmas.
It sounds great.
Yeah.
I mean, the first thing I think of, Jim Gaffigan did one of his episodes based on this film, which is just making me laugh a bit. But and the other thing is too, like, it actually is really hard to find, well, in my journeys looking through, you know, Christmas films on, you know, all these apps that we have, it's hard to find an actual religious Christmas film, but it's good to know that there are these Christian messages or proper Christmas messages inserted into the film, so that you can get, you know, these messages out of them. You know, you still get the true meaning of Christmas, you know, like out of, you know, these films, even if it's not intentional. You know, they're still there to be found, which is pretty awesome.
Yeah, to all the people listening, any Christmas film which has a bit of merit, go ahead and baptize that film. And even if it doesn't show us Christ who shows us the way, it shows us part of the way. And those parts where it does, just blow those up. You know, hey kids, look, Jesus was about this too. And this little bit here, this is how you can be more Christ-like. Just, you know, I think there's some merit. I know there are lots of other films as well, and we haven't got, you know, in fact, we're already way over time. Sorry, everyone.
We're over time, yes.
Yeah.
Rambled on a bit today.
Yeah. I just want to throw in one very quick one. I won't say too much about it, but for years and years, and it was about the time when I had an iPhone 3GS, so whatever year that was, and it was like iPad 2
ages
at the
ago.
Time.
Yeah. Long time ago. 10 years?
Yeah. Like I discovered an app, and it's the Peanuts Christmas. Was it Charlie Brown's Christmas, I think it's called? And so there was a film. I remember there was a cartoon film where, you know, Charlie Brown is trying to organize a Christmas play, and that, you know, it doesn't go well from the beginning. And, you know, things get better over time, and they all come together and they make a Christmas tree out of a stick and a blanket and some, you know, and just some leftover Christmas baubles, and they have a beautiful Christmas in the end. But there's an app that tells that story, so it reads it to you. But what I love, love, love about this app is that you should sit down with your young children and have an iPad or have whatever you can have in front of you, and show it to them, because it's, firstly, it's interactive. So they've kind of gamified it. So on each page of the story, there are little games that you can play, like flicking snowballs around and, you know, and moving characters and discovering hidden objects, which give you bonus things when you finish the story. The narrator reads the story, and you can see the words light up as he reads each word, like a karaoke kind of thing. And your kids can touch a word and it will say the word. So, you know, if you touch the word Christmas, it'll go Christmas, 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 you know, like that. But the other beautiful thing about this interactive app, is that in the center of this story, Linus, who is one of Charlie Brown's closest friends, you know, Charlie Brown is despairing because he's trying to control how the Christmas play is going, and it all falls apart. And Charlie Brown screams out, "Isn't there anyone who knows what Christmas is all about?" And Linus comes up to him, and they're standing on a stage where the play is going to be delivered. So now here he is on the stage with a spotlight on him, and he reads out the Gospel of Luke, and it's basically about finding the child Jesus by the shepherds. And it finishes with him reading, and the angels appeared, you know, and said, "Glory to God in the highest, and on earth peace and goodwill towards all men." And it's such a powerful thing, because when he hears that, And I don't know if it's deliberate, but there's this scene where Charlie Brown is like, he goes out and he just looks, you know, he's just on his own and he's contemplating. And it's from there that the story changes and sort of like the real meaning of Christmas starts to come about. It's not obsessing over the preparations, obsessing over the play, but it's Christ our Lord. And I love, you know, that Linus explicitly says, "For unto you born this day in the city of David a Savior, which is Christ the Lord." He quotes scripture from Luke. It's so powerful. Go baptize, exploit it with your kids, everyone. Just, you know,
lovely.
There are so many ways we can build faith in our kids this Advent and this Christmas, I think. Yeah, so Caroline, we've gone way over time today getting happy with our Christmas episode. So why don't we finish off there? So we just wanted to do a little bit of follow-up. So first of all, in our previous episode, we talked about Kanye West's new album and how, again, there is, you know, it's very explicitly Christ-centered, and it's kind of his conversion story. His conversion is very, very, very young. I think we talked about it being since April. And you know, in the early days of one's conversion, you might get a couple of things wrong, and that it happens. You know, I don't want to be too judgmental, but we did get a couple of comments on the StarQuest Facebook page about people who were very concerned because Kanye has associated himself with, you know, people like Joel Osteen and whatever. And, you know, yes, there's a lot of prosperity gospel that's going on there. I think Kanye West at some stage did talk about him starting his own church. And these are things that don't gel with us very well. And I understand that completely. And I actually think that the concerns that were shared with us were valid. And I affirm those. And I thank those people on Facebook who shared their concerns. And all I could really say in response is, let's all pray for him together. Let's pray that his heart goes to the fullness of Christ. And you and I even said this, maybe, you know, it would be great if he found his way into the Catholic Church one day.
Yeah.
But at least he's made the first step of saying that Jesus is the person that I need. So,
yeah
I hope and pray that he does, you know, fully complete that journey. And he will be in our prayers, especially at this Christmas time as well. Yeah. So, Caroline, I'll let you do the next bit of follow-up. We got to be on Jimmy Akin's Mysterious Worlds.
Yes, we did. Oh, yeah. So the last episode of Jimmy Akin's Mysterious World was concerning the Somerton Man. And this was, a cold case about a man who was found deceased on Somerton Beach in South Australia. And Jimmy and Dom wanted an Australian perspective on this mystery. And so you and I, Lindsay, recorded some of our thoughts and, you know, some input from us regarding the case. I think you and I actually hadn't heard about it before, but once we got into it, you know, I think we're still talking about it. We're still going over our theories about, you know, why he died, how he died, yes. You know, like even the theories that we gave to Jimmy have changed several times. You know, we keep improving.
Yeah, we're debunking our own theories now.
I know. So like we're thinking, oh, no, maybe it probably was this way, it was this, it was that, you know. So, you know, if you want more theories, we're happy to provide those as a follow-up. So that was probably a big deal for us. Thank you, Dom and Jimmy, for having us on that on your podcast. Go back and listen to it. Jimmy Akin's Mysterious World is a really, really well researched, really, you know, in depth discussion. You know, it's really, really good. I think it will leave you wanting more, and you won't stop thinking about it. Just as we haven't stopped thinking about it. So, that was a ton of fun.
Yeah, and if you're listening to us because Jimmy Akin told you something, come and listen to Catholics of Oz, welcome. It's great to have you here. And I hope you're enjoying. And tell us who you are. We'd love to know you.
Yeah. Thank you for listening. We'd love to interact with you. Yeah.
So before we wrap it up, and I think Caroline and Jerry, who's not with us today, I think we do really want to thank Dom as the president of, CEO of StarQuest and the board of StarQuest, who trusted us to start a podcast and you know, gave us a fortnightly format. We want to thank you for giving us the opportunity to be on this year, and we look forward to next year and the years to come. But just giving three little Aussies from the southeastern suburbs of Melbourne a chance, we really appreciate that. And we're so grateful for the opportunities that have come along because of it. And to all of you who are listening, just a reminder again, we're in Advent. It doesn't matter when you listen to this podcast, but if you haven't started your Advent journey yet, start today. Like a Christmas carol, it's never too late. And may this Advent lead you to the baby Jesus, not the baby Yoda, but to the baby Jesus and everything that he promised for us. You know, Christ coming to earth as one of us is in his incarnation and saying, "Follow me, this is the way." And what a beautiful way it is for all of us. So before we go, we'd like to take a moment to thank our patrons on this very, very long episode who have made it possible for us to create the Catholics of Oz. So thank you so much to Jeremy S., Joanne M., Christine G., Pat F., and Stephen S. We thank you so much for supporting the StarQuest Network. Your generous donations and all the patrons that support support StarQuest, their donations they give at sqpn.com/give. Make it possible for the Catholics of Oz and all of the other shows on StarQuest to continue. And you can join them by visiting sqpn.com/give. Also, we'd like to know what you thought about the topics that we've discussed today. So you can send us feedback by visiting us at sqpn.com/Oz, spelled O-Z, where you can also find our show notes. You can also leave feedback at the SQPN Facebook page, facebook.com/StarQuestMedia. Just look for the post about this episode. And also, we have our own Catholics of Oz Facebook page, facebook.com/Catholics of Oz. And it's been nice to see a couple of people joining us slowly. There's a few newbies who have come and joined the page. So welcome to that page as well. And leave comments, please. Tell us what you think about our episodes there too. We can also be reached by email at catholicsofoz@sqpn.com. Caroline, thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thank you, Lindsay. It was very fun, as usual. I want to wish everybody a Merry and Blessed Christmas and all the best for the new year.
Yep. And once again, I'm Lindsay Sant. Merry Christmas. God bless. And thank you for listening to the Catholics of Oz in 2019 on StarQuest.